Hi, and welcome to the Rare Business Podcast. My name is Adrian Swinsko, and I'm a consultant, advisor, researcher, and writer on all things related to customer service and customer experience. Through this podcast, I seek out and interview CEOs, entrepreneurs, business and tech leaders, and leading thinkers about what it takes to build organizations that produce better outcomes for both customers and employees in this fast-moving modern age that we live in. If this is your first time listening to one of these interviews, then welcome. And please do dive into the archives at adrianswinsko.com, as I've now completed over 250 of these interviews in the last few years. If this is not your first time listening, then thank you for returning, and I'll aim to do a good enough job to keep you coming back week after week. Anyway, that's enough from me right now. Let's get into the interview. So, quick note before we get started, today's interview is something different and features myself being interviewed by Will Barron of the Salesman podcast. Now, it was a lot of fun, and so I thought it was worth sharing too. So let's get over to the interview and you can listen to me being grilled by Will.
Where along the sales cycle for a B2B sales professional, where does service and experience come into it? Does this happen at the end when we close the deal, or does it come in somewhere else?
It's the whole thing. Right. I think the I can't remember the exact source, but I there's a piece of research that was done, and I think it still holds today, and it's particularly true of B2B sort of markets. And it says that about 60% of your customers will have already made up their mind who they want to buy from before they've even either picked up the phone, arranged a meeting, or sent you an email. So that tells you kind of where this kind of weight is. And yet I struggle with the idea that you think about the sales profession. A lot of the time salespeople don't necessarily acknowledge that or actually spend their time thinking about that or where the customer is or their customer is prior to that initial point of contact, whether that's precipitated by them or by their customer. And so ignoring that, not paying attention to that, not thinking about how they can get involved with that in some sort of way is a mistake. But also a huge, huge opportunity.
How does this change things when buyers are making decisions before they pick up the phone or getting far along the buying cycle and doing their own research before they pick up the phone? How does that change things from an experience standpoint?
Well, you think about it, it's like you think about the traditional sales kind of cycle, particularly in B2B, the people will have their kind of meeting and then they'll go in and they'll go like, here's what we're kind of doing. This is a product or service. Here's all the features and the benefits and blah, 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 blah. And I'm pretty sure it's probably a common piece of experience that many salespeople have had in their lives where they'll be faced with this new prospect. And then they'll start going into all the detail around the products, and then they'll see the customer's eyes roll into the back of their heads. And they're like, going, oh my God, I'm doing something wrong. It's because actually what they're doing is they're almost like trying to educate the customer on stuff they already know because they've done the research, right? And so actually what you're doing is you end up not understanding, you haven't understood where the customer is at. You're making yourself look foolish, make them look foolish because you haven't understood the context and where they're at on the cycle. And you're wasting time, both yours and theirs. And that's almost the worst thing that we can do. If you think about it this way, think about how we feel when we've made an appointment to see somebody, like you're going to meet somebody on a street corner or something to go to the pub or you're on a date or whatever, and somebody's late. Now, whether it's 10 minutes or 15 minutes or even just 5 minutes, that waiting around for somebody who's late, it's just like a waste of time. That's the sort of feeling that you're generating in your customer, your new prospect. You're like going, they're sat there kind of twiddling their thumbs, just going like, can we just get to the proper bit? And so I think there's something to keep in mind is that you have to understand where your customer is at when you start to engage with them. And to assume that you can start from zero is a complete mistake.
This might seem like a real dumb question to ask, but I'm going to ask it anyway because I think there's perhaps some potentially some misconceptions here. Is great customer service, great customer experience, is this a strategic play, as you just outlined then, Adrian, of we need to kind of have a think of where we need to be, what we need to say, and put ourselves in the customer's position? Is it a strategic play on that front, Or, and I'm going to flippantly do this to exaggerate the point, is it picking up the phone with a smile on our face or giving a great handshake and welcoming people when we meet them? Is it a strategic play, and especially in the B2B space, or is it something more lighthearted, like being happy when you're on the phone with people?
I think it's both. It has to be both. I mean, I think the thing is that as salespeople, yes, salespeople, whether they're kind of, you know, that was a typical sort of way of characterizing people, hunters or farmers or both. You know, you have to think about that if you want to nurture and develop these kind of this ecosystem of an environment that's going to attract leads into you and not just all be about yourself, then that's more of a strategic sort of thing. But actually, and it's the same thing as like when a customer that is doing some research lands at your website, that's sort of the first impressions really can account. And it's the same when you're meeting somebody either face to face, or you're sending them an email, or you're kind of like speaking to them on the phone. All of these little things matter. Here's the thing I think about service and experience is that it is not made up of one massive thing. It's made up of 1,000 little things. And that's the point. Is like that's where everybody can take the opportunity and the responsibility to look for areas where they can improve and where they're also the company can improve. And it doesn't need to be a big bang thing. It could be actually here's a whole bunch of little things that I can develop or I can help the company develop, and that's just going to raise the bar for everybody.
For the B2B salesperson who's listening to this, and for context, they're probably doing a lot of email outreach, then getting on the phone. And then for me, I'd be seeing my customers in medical device sales. I'd be driving over to whatever hospital and sitting down with them and going into theaters with them. So there's multiple layers here of potential to add to the experience of things. For someone in that context, Adrian, where should we start? What was the starting point of all of this?
So if I think about myself kind of, personally, so I guess I'm a B2B salesman because I'm selling myself, right? And I primarily work with businesses, and therefore it's business to be my business to their business. And the thing that I always kind of like start with is if I get an inquiry or get an introduction or something, the thing that's furthest from my mind is actually the sale and the number and the time frame right at the very, very beginning. So, for example, you say you sent me an email that says, "Hey, Adrian, I've spoken to, say, Susan, and Susan told me that you did these kind of workshops for her, and they were great, and we're thinking about some similar sort of like stuff in our organization, but we're not sure kind of thing. It would be great to have a chat." And I'd be like, "Fantastic. I'd love to have a chat and learn a bit more about what you're trying to do." And you know, you do that by the phone and then just see if there's a bit of chemistry sort of thing. And then if there's that works, and you maybe send them a bit more information, still not selling, just kind of like giving them more information. But I'm also happy to come over and see you. And then you end up the whites of the eyes, and you're still focused on the relationship, because that's the thing I think powers everything. You know, because if you can have a crappy relationship and a great product, but I'm pretty sure that's not gonna right. It's not gonna work. But you can also have a great relationship and a kind of product, and it's probably going to be a much better result. Even better if you've got a great relationship and a great product, and then you go boom, right? But actually, the point is in all of this is like it's not about you; it's about them, and it's about your bond kind of with them, and that is the thing that you're building this foundation of trust and understanding that they allows you to build on in future, and that's something that's going to build on delivery of a deal, but also future deals as well, because they're more likely to refer you on to other people.
I've got a similar approach when I'm reaching out to get brands to sponsor the podcast. So I only have to reach out kind of once or twice a year, and then that typically fills the inventory that we have, because we've got people who come on regularly. Salesforce, HubSpot, LeadIQ, brands like this come with us kind of multiple times a year. The best email that I've ever sent, and it's almost the only email that I send at the moment, is along the lines of how you just described, but it's me outreaching to them of, "Hey, I've seen on your website, this sucks, this is great, this is this. I've built this kind of podcast audience with very little kind of like fund, well, no funding, but very little kind of ad spend. I'd love to see if any of things I've learned over the past 3 or 4 years, I can help you with. That will lead to probably, you know, almost 100% reply rate leads to then, and the only people who don't reply typically reply to that second or third email, because in the first one, they assume that I'm after something. Because, you know, most people are after something, even when they send an email like that, even though I'm not. I'll then send that second, third email, almost 100% reply rate at this point. I'll then get on the phone and do what you just described of, I'll just give them as much knowledge, as much effort, as much kind of investigation. I'll go back off. I'll make introductions. A bunch of time, they'll end up coming on the podcast or someone from the organization will. They see then that, oh, our blog got another 1,000 views on that particular day that the podcast went live. And then it's them trying to push money on me because they want to secure the kind of one or two ad spaces that I've got left.
Absolutely. I mean, I had a message on LinkedIn this very morning from somebody who's supposedly like a sales professional. Oh, my word. Oh, my word. And it started off, hey, da-da-da, as a valued LinkedIn connection of mine, blah blah blah, and then proceeded with about 3 different paragraphs with links of like this proven sales system, fireworks going off in the background sort of thing, people kind of playing trombones and all sorts of nonsense. And I was a bit like, the thing I replied back and basically said, please, you know, something to the effect of, please don't try and, when you say valued LinkedIn connection, the first thing you're doing, you're trying to sell me something. It's like going, that it shows me that you just don't get it.
Yeah.
You're like, I have no idea who you are. I've got like nearly 5,000 connections on LinkedIn. I've randomly sort of like, I don't randomly, I have a system of doing sort of vetting thing, people. It's not a particularly tight system, but it's a system. But then every now and again, there are people that show up that just go, I am going to do this mass emailer, which is, excuse my language, going to try and flog the shit out of your trash that you've just got a job lot of. And I look at that and just going, I'm sorry, I'm now going to remember your name. I'm going to, and then anybody asks me, I'm not going to badmouth you or anything, but anybody asks me about you, then I'll just tell them, like, you know what? I wouldn't trust this person as far as I could throw them, because of the way that they've approached it to start with. This kind of thing around that you've got this LinkedIn valued LinkedIn connection. It's almost a bit like, and then you how they proceeded to try and sell me something or sell me involvement in something. And I just thought, I'm pretty sure you've got a problematic definition of what valued means. And I was like, you're toast, man. I'm sorry, but you're toast.
I feel like so this is going to be an interesting one of where we go from here, Adrian, because 50% of the audience is, they're the converted, they're on board. We've touched on similar topics on the podcast before. They're going, yes, I get it. I've perhaps not mastered this yet, but I know where I want to go with it. The other half are going, oh, this sounds fantastic. I'll just get on the phone with all the people, but I've got a sales target to hit. I've not got time. Just adding value. What the hell does that even mean anyway? So I feel like we've got a split here. So is there a way to systematize some of this? We can get onto this is going to be a touchy subject of perhaps measuring it. But before we get onto that, is there a way to systematize it? Is there a way to, I don't know. Yeah, I guess, is there a way to measure customer experience so that we know whether we're going in the right direction or the wrong?
Well, I think that before you even get into the big sort of thing around customer experience, I think you probably need to step back and think about the idea of systematizing it. I think you have to systematize your own approach. And so I have an approach where I understand that sometimes people get introduced to me and then, you know, and I follow up with them, or I've been introduced to somebody and then I follow up with them and then I don't hear anything sort of thing. Now, I know for the efficiency of my own effort that I have a certain set of rules in terms of things that I'm going to do, how many times I'm going to contact them. And it's like a 3 strikes and you're out sort of rule. But the thing I do is I use psychology in some of this sort of stuff. So the first email, I'll send it, and then they'll go, and then I might not get anything in return. And then the second email I'll send, I'll actually forward on the email I originally sent to the person and going, just to making sure that you got this email, look forward to hearing from you. The idea being that I know that people are busy. I know that people forget, but you're also saying, I also know that technology lets us down, even though we make an assumption that emails have 100% deliverability kind of rate. They don't. It's about 99.9%. But sometimes if you assume that it could have fallen through the cracks, what you're doing is you're giving somebody the opportunity to say, oh, no, yeah, it's fine. I got that. You just give them a chance to give you a very quick reply without any consideration. I did that again this morning. It happened to actually a medical devices client that I've been introduced to. And I sent exactly that because I hadn't heard back. And they came back and went, yeah, that's fantastic. I'll tell you more on Wednesday. I'm like, brilliant, not a problem. The idea being, so you're basically thinking about it from a mindset perspective. Now, if you get nothing from there, then I might be inclined to either leave it a week and then follow up and say, just want to make sure. Or then I might call them, just leave, if I don't get them, maybe leave a voice message. And then, but the third thing I'll do is, and this is the third striking you're out sort of thing, is I won't say that, but I'll imply that. Because what I'll say is like, look, I know I was trying to arrange time to have a chat and have a conversation. I don't want to stalk you or hassle you or annoy you. And therefore, what I'm going to do is I'm going to leave it in your court until I hear back from you. Because I acknowledge that you're busy and so on and so forth. The thing that does, and it's a bit like child psychology. So taking something, you give baby a rattle or something, and then you take the rattle away from them. What do they want? They want the rattle, right? And so by taking something away from somebody, more often than not, people go, oh, no, I'm just busy. And then you get this acknowledgement that they are listening. And I think for me, it's that sort of thing is that we need to be smarter about how we communicate with people and how it works. I know that that's a system I've developed because I've studied, I'm a bit of a fascinated by psychology. And I think about some of this sort of stuff and I learned from all sorts of different sort of people. But I think we need to find a system that works for us that manages our efforts but maintains the relationship, but that tries to leverage psychology in a way so we do the right things at the right sort of time. Because ultimately what we want is we just want to elicit a response that allows us to get to the next sort of step. Now, that's all part of the experience, but it's about, I think we all need to figure out our own approach. And then we've diligently follow that approach. You can be of value to somebody, but you can't keep doing it, and you can't keep chasing a rabbit around a field going like, it's a big deal, like, who cares if it's a big deal? You're wasting your time, and they know that you're wasting your time, and they're making you kind of do a merry dance. So the key point, I guess, is like, you've got to have respect for them and also yourself, and you've got to figure out how that marries together. Long answer, but I hope that made sense.
It makes total sense. And again, for context here, perhaps, because it's almost counterintuitive, and it seems like if you've got a really healthy pipeline for someone like yourself, if you're oversubscribed and you don't need the business, but you know you want to build relationships, you'd like it eventually, perhaps, that free email structure makes total sense. For the salesperson who's listening to this, who isn't oversubscribed, who doesn't have a healthy pipeline, they're probably thinking the exact opposite, right? They're probably thinking, well, I'll just send out 50 emails rather than 4 really good ones. I'll spam out 15 posts on LinkedIn or in messages rather than just 1 or 2, you know, which is like the one you alluded to earlier on. But that doesn't help, right? That's short-term, just digging you deeper in the hole, in my experience anyway.
I think so. I mean, I think the thing is that it's all about your reputation. If we go back to that original point about people do the research before they get in touch with you, then if you're somebody that's is a bit of a spammer and a thrasher abouter, as it were, then that's going to get around. You know, people do their research and come up with their questions and think about kind of things, and then look at kind of activity, and they get a gauge of who you are and what you're like. I like to call that ideas that we have to be conscious that we are developing trust at a distance. And that's the thing that I guess many, many people, many brands, they forget. They forget that it's actually, trust doesn't start when you're in touch with kind of somebody. Even at a personal level, as a professional level, your trust that you're developing starts at a distance. And you have to think about, how do I develop trust, regardless of actually whether I've spoken to that person or been in touch with that person or not, which is like a crazy thought. But it is that sort of thing. And so it's a bit like, well, people have got to go, even if you are getting pummeled by short-term targets, and I know it happens, and I have sympathy for people that have to deal with that type of sort of structure. There's two things. One is that if you are having to always scrabble around for the short-term targets, then you probably have to ask yourself, do I have a long-term plan? Otherwise, you just kind of go up and down, up and down. And the second thing is that if you're always struggling around for short-term kind of targets, then you've got to be wary of the sort of tactics that you'll resort to hit those kind of targets, and then the longer term damage it's going to have on the brand and also your own kind of professional reputation.
How little emphasis do people put on their professional reputation, considering we are not just moving into an age of, but we're right in smack in the middle of an age where people remember names, people can look up your profile, there's a history online. If you go to archive.org, you can look at someone's LinkedIn profile from 4 years ago, it's still up there, even though they deleted stuff. How little time, effort, energy are we spending on our brand when, as I say this, it seems crazy important, right?
Yeah, completely. I mean, it's like, you got to ask yourself, kind of like, what do you want to be known for? You know, how do you want people to describe you? You know, are you not just a fun person to be around, but are you kind of a useful person? Are you a valuable person? Are you a helpful person? Are you an approachable kind of person? You know, and does that work across all sorts of shapes and sizes of people, right? And from all sorts of different sort of backgrounds, you know, how do you approach these kind of things? Are you, are you humble? Are you curious? Are you this kind of natural curator that you're always kind of showing people kind of stuff? Are you a natural connector? I mean, that's the thing. You got to figure out, I guess, but at the point with all that, you can't be all things to all people. What you've got to do is you've got to find your groove. And that's the thing. Like Marcus Buckingham was a big fan of this, the guy from Gallup that wrote the book called Strengths Finders. And if any salespeople haven't read that book, then you should read it, like Strengths Finders 2.0 or something. There's an insert. Don't get the electronic version, get the hardback, because there's an insert in the back that should allow you to go on online and take this Strengths Finder test. And what their basic premise is that people talk about, oh, you should always be working on your weaknesses sort of thing. And he's going, no, that's crap. You work on your strengths, figure out who you are, and that's it. That's you play to your strengths. I mean, you're a Yorkshireman, right? So Yorkshire is, they're big cricket fans, right? And same with cricket. You're either an opening batsman, you're a middle order batsman, or you're an opening bowler, or you're a spinner, or whatever. People kind of have a thing. They're not just cricketers. They have things that they do and that they're specialists in. And I think that's the thing with salespeople. You're not just this homogenous group. It should be, you have your own strengths and you should be able to play to those strengths, and your teammates should acknowledge your strengths so you understand how you can complement each other. But the first thing you should do is figure out what they are. Don't be like anybody else, but be the best version of yourself, and then figure out how you can turn that up to 11.
So I'm just going to say this, and it's not anything on your behalf here. I'm from Liverpool, but I live in Yorkshire. But the reason I called you out on it is the last time someone mentioned that, I just didn't say anything. You know, clearly I'm from Yorkshire. Everyone knows this who comes on the show as a guest. And I've got quite a kind of a, I definitely don't have a Scouse accent unless I get really angry, then it goes a little bit Scouse. But then I had a bunch of people locally going, hey, I'm a Yorkshireman as well. And then it was a series of email conversations of going, nope, sorry to disappoint everyone. Yeah, I'm actually a Scouser. But the cricket metaphor goes to Liverpool Football Club and Everton Football Club, precisely there.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And so maybe I should have got the subliminal message, kind of it's red background or something.
Maybe. There's something that you, and I don't want to gloss over this, something you said that I think is really valuable, and this might be one of the key takeaways of this episode. Should we sit down for 5 minutes and write down the answer to the question, who do you want people, or how do you want people to describe you? Is that a real exercise that we should be doing? Because I've never really done that before, but at least it gives you a point to reverse engineer the experience from. If you want to be the non-show-offy, the reliable, which is me in medical device sales, the non-showy-off dude, the guy who's just reliable, he'll come in and help you out, he lives local so we can drop off equipment, that's how I want to be described. And it's not flashy and it's not particularly exciting, but that's what won me business, being like sure. that. Is that an exercise we should be doing of, you know, answering that question?
I think that's absolutely, yeah, absolutely right. Because not everybody is going to be that sort of, you know, the big flashy, exciting sort of like salesperson. Not everybody's going to be that person who's going to be, have the confidence to walk up to somebody and go, hi, my name's such and such, and just brass neck their way into sort of an opportunity. That's not everybody's groove. That'll work sometimes, but those opportunities don't come about all the time. So yes, I think you're absolutely right. It's a really useful exercise to think about, you know, how would I like people to describe me? What sort of reputation do I want to have? And then you ask yourself, I guess the second question is like going, am I fulfilling that? Am I living up to that? And if I'm not, then what do I need to do to sort of amplify that and to live up to what I want to be, as it were? Because that's ultimately your trust at a distance sort of thing. That's the thing that you've got to work on, because, you know, even in this big technology, digital, in technology kind of infused and digital age sort of thing, the challenge is that people, particularly in the B2B space, people still buy from people. That's it, period. And lest we forget that.
Two things for a wrap up, Adrian. One, other than what we've covered, are there any counterintuitive or unusual ways that we can perhaps either build trust at a distance, because I love that phrase, or just improve the B2B experience for our customers?
I think there's one. So one thing I would say is that people kind of talk about people should be writing more, particularly salespeople get kind of known more. I think actually we need to become better, almost like librarians in many ways, curators of stuff that we think is going to be interesting. And it doesn't necessarily need to be your own stuff or your company stuff or whatever. It can just be something that you connect the dots. You go, here's me, here's my client, here's maybe an industry that they're in, here's a challenge or an interesting kind of perspective that you go, I thought that you might find this interesting based on, say, a conversation that we had. And that could be the value add, is you don't have to spend time just writing stuff down. It just could be, just keep your eyes and your ears open for stuff that people might find interesting. And so I guess the counterintuitive thing is you don't need to be creating new stuff all of the time. You just need to be willing to find things and then willing to share things because you think it's of value to somebody else. Because again, it's about the relationship. And I'll go back and repeat the thing that I said before is that it builds on this, is that the idea that if you want to improve your service or experience, you should focus on the 100 or 1,000 small things that you can improve. Because actually, I talk about it, the grit in our service or experience is like, particularly when like we notice we've got a grit, piece of grit or pebble in our shoes, and that's sort of the only thing that we remember as we're walking along, right? It's the same thing about service and experience. We remember the tiny little things, the little annoyances, that's the stuff that kind of hangs around. But those are opportunities for us to improve. And that could be speed of response to an email, could be do you pick up the phone? Could it be the handover between sales and kind of implementation? Could it be all these different sort of things? Could be the handover between sales and account management or into success or all these different sort of things? Is sometimes it's the smallest things, and almost that can start with you just showing that rather than you just sign a deal, that you care about the person and kind of how they get on with it, rather than just about fine, I'm done, contracts in, invoices in, poof, you know, next,
yeah,
sort of thing, is actually don't focus just on the deal, focus on the person and how they're going to get on even after you've done the deal.
Two things here. One, you said super subtly, and I think is incredibly important if you're going to be emailing people proactively with content. There's nothing worse with getting an email that you know has gone to 40 other people that is still spam, that is a sentence of, hey, I saw this and thought of you. I don't want emails like that. I get them all the time. People send me kind of podcasting data or analytics or articles. I don't care. I literally do not care. Don't send me them. But what you said, which I thought was, again, really subtle, was based on a conversation that we had, even better, you know, based on a conversation we had last Wednesday, I thought this might be useful. That shows that you listened to the conversation, you pondered on it after the fact, and even if you just sent me some bullshit article that I'm never going to read, at least it looks like you do care, right? It puts across the fact that you've made an effort and you've been bothered about it. And I just thought that was really subtle, and I thought it was worth pointing out because I don't want the audience going spamming kind of a templated email kind of straight after listening to this.
It's about intent. It's right in the very, very heart of it. It's about intent. Now, intent can lead us to spam as well, but actually it's about that one-to-one intent and paying attention. And that's our challenge. Our challenge is that we are still trying to do that one-to-many sort of experience, but actually we need to think about how do we use the tools that we have to create that one-to-one experience. So it's almost like how do we create the relationships and the styles of old using modern technology?
That makes total sense. And the other thing I just wanted to kind of wrap on here, and just to give the audience a quick tease, something you said which got me smiling, as you said, Adrian, was it's the lots of little things that kind of compound, I guess, to make the big difference. And we're launching our new kind of sales development platform for the audience here. It's a redo of a platform we worked on kind of years and years ago, but it never really took off. And that was, we called it the Sales School. We've hired an illustrator. We've got a series of different characters. We've got the salesperson that we can all relate to. We've got this arsehole sales manager. We've got a terrible customer, all these different people. And it's kind of adult kind of comic humor that goes within it. But I've worked so hard on getting so many inside jokes and just little teasers and little things that go in between it all that the people who've had come in and go on through the video content and the workbook content so far, they've just been so excited about these sodding damn characters, which were almost an afterthought to the great content that's in there anyway, that they're going through the courses because they want to see that next inside joke, or they want to see where this thing that someone mentions in one video goes on to a completely different course in another video, where that all pulls together. And it's changed my whole perception of building entertaining content in the fact that it is the little things, right? You need good information, but then almost the entertainment value of it takes over after that point.
Sure. I mean, I think it's absolutely right. I mean, I think the thing is like, this is serious, you know, the stuff of life, business of life and things, it's serious stuff. But we shouldn't have to do it with a kind of a doer tone sort of kind of thing.
Yeah.
And if anything, if the more interesting and the more kind of fun we can make it, while still retaining the seriousness of it, then the better. And so you're absolutely right. That sort of that, like for example, I don't know if you ever come across it. Have you ever heard of a book called Patrick Lencioni's Five Dysfunctions of a Team?
No.
So it's a kind of a book. It's a, you know, it's great around sort of thinking about team dynamics and dysfunctions and things. But you know, the best version of that book is that I think Patrick himself had it reproduced, or somebody had it reproduced as a in a manga style comic. Mm-hmm. Genius, because it was done as a almost a story, but then somebody went and illustrated it. And when you look at it as a book,
yeah,
as a comic book, perfect, absolutely perfect. You get all this hard hitting sort of like stuff, but in this format that is so engaging, so interesting. It's genius.
Yeah, and there's no genius on our side from what we're doing. Our illustrator Cars is amazing, and what I'll give him, you know, I want this scene doing, and he comes back and it's the expressions on the faces and the fact that there's sweat going off this and someone's, and there's something sort of going on in the background which I've not told him to do. That's what really adds to it. So as I said, there's no genius coming from me of any of this, but when you're pulling in people who are great at what they're doing, it just adds another dimension to it, right? And changes things up. And with that, Adrian, I've got one final question for you, mate, something that I ask everyone that comes on the show. If you could go back in time, speak to your younger self, what would be the one piece of advice you'd give him to help him become better at selling?
Don't be so quick to fix. And what I mean by that is my character is I'm a natural fixer. I'm naturally, somebody tells me something, I'm like, oh, you could try this. And what I've learned is that when you do that, you stop listening. And actually, here's a test for people, particularly salespeople, and everybody listening, watching this, is ask yourself this, you know, over the course of the rest of today, or kind of tomorrow, or the rest of this week, when you're having conversations with people, see how many times you notice when you're having a conversation with somebody or they're speaking, how often are you just waiting for them to finish talking before you can tell them what you think? Because as soon as that happens, you stop listening. And so by just being more aware of the conversation isn't necessarily a ping pong game. It's actually it should be a conversation, and we should focus on the person who's communicating to completely understand before we think about fixing something or providing a response. And that's something I find really hard, really hard. But I'm getting better at it, and that's something I would have loved to have told myself. My dad gave me a little Bluebell matchbox when I was a kid. I don't know if you remember those.
Yep.
And they had little kind of sayings on the back of them. And it said, because I used to come down and just blurt things out. And he said, put your brain into gear before you open your mouth. And I think it's just so analogous kind of to that, or linked to that. It's just that I've learned over the last number of years that actually listening and really paying attention to people is probably the biggest show and sign of respect that you could ever give any individual.
Yeah.
Make them the center of your universe for that point in time.
You're speaking to the right audience here, because I've done it many times. I'll probably still do it now. You get on the phone call, you've been rejected so many times that afternoon, especially if you're doing any cold calling or anything like that, that someone says, oh, that is a problem that I do have. Perhaps you can solve it for me. And you go straight into this weird pitch and you're shoving it down, you're thrusting it down their throat, when perhaps the smarter move, perhaps what the customer wants from an experience standpoint, is to tell you a little bit more, is to give you context so you can make a better decision. So you're speaking to the convert, well, maybe not the converted, but you're speaking to people who will have experienced that for sure. And with that, Adrian, tell us a bit about the book, and then tell us where we can find out more about you as well.
So the book is, as I say, called How to Wow. Here we go. Picture. Really easy title. You can find it on most Amazon sites, on the UK and the .co.uk and the .com sites. It's kind of both available there. If people want to find out more about me, my website is adrianswinscoe.com. So that's AdrianSwinscoe. And that's where I have most of my content goes out. I also have a podcast series, which I kind of speak to all sorts of different people doing cool things in service and experience. And also, if you that way inclined, I also write a column on Forbes. Just put my name and Forbes in any search engine, and you should find it. But anybody wants to talk, then I'm always happy to talk, and always interested in meeting new people doing cool stuff.
Perfect. I will link to all that in the show notes of this episode over at salesman.org. And now, Adrian, I want to thank you for your time. I think we covered a lot of ground in this one, so I appreciate that, mate, and for coming on the Salesman Podcast.
Thank you. Well, that's it for another interview. I really hope you enjoyed it. Now, every time I complete one of these interviews, I learn something new, and I try and incorporate that new learning into my writing, my speaking, my workshops, and the consulting that I do for my clients. If you're interested, you can find out more about how I work with clients over at adrianswinscoe.com. But one final thing before I go, please consider heading over to iTunes or whichever podcast platform you choose to use, and do leave a review. Every little helps, as they say. Anyway, that's all for now. Thank you for listening, and do listen in again. All the very best.